Welcome to All the Wiser. I'm Kimmy Kolb. All the Wiser is a one-for-one podcast. For every inspiring interview you hear, we donate $2,000 to charities around the world. I believe in the power of storytelling to inspire us all to think differently about the world around us. So I've combed the country for some of the most jaw-dropping stories you have ever heard. People who have been to the brink and back, stories of survival against all odds, and whose lives have been changed in unthinkable ways. Today's interview is with Cassie McKee. Cassie happens to be my cousin and one of the people that I look up most to in life. I have always been in awe by her sense of self and optimism, and I'm really excited for you guys to meet her today. Cassie has a form of dwarfism called achondroplasia. Her husband, Tom, and her kids, Sam and Sarah, have achondroplasia as well. Today, we talk openly about their life living as a family of little people in a world designed for people of average height. We talk about genetics, parenting, strangers at the checkout line, how she loves nothing more than an honest question from a five-year-old, and the importance of curiosity and conversations. We recorded today's interview over the phone. It may sound a bit different, like cousins talking on the phone, because that's what it is. But I'm really grateful to be able to have you guys listen in on this conversation. So many people have asked me questions about Cassie and her family over the years, and I just think it's really cool to hear everything directly from her. And before we get started, a quick ask. If you haven't already, please subscribe to All the Wiser on Apple Podcast. Every other week, we bring you great stories like Cassie, and we want to make sure you know when they come out. And now, for this week's All the Wiser episode with my cousin and role model, Cassie McKee. Cassie McKee, welcome to All the Wiser.
Thank you so much.
So I was thinking about it. In my professional career, I have never interviewed a family member, so this is a first. You are my cousin. I have known you since I was born. You are the person who taught me how to make mixtapes, and you are also the one who saved me when I got trapped in our grandma's foldaway bed when we played hide and seek and I was stuck inside the couch. So
indeed.
that gives a setup of how close we are and how many years we go back. But today, absolutely, we are going to talk about your life as a person and as a mother living with dwarfism. Before we do that, I would love for you to introduce yourself to our audience.
Excellent. Thank you. I am Cassie, Kimmy's cousin, and I am a mom and a woman and a wife, and I have a form of dwarfism that is called achondroplasia, and it's the most common type of dwarfism, although dwarfism is not that common.
And can you explain, what is dwarfism?
The type of dwarfism that I have is called achondroplasia. And that is, my growth is inhibited, or it was when I was growing. It is a failure of conversion from when the cartilage gets formed into bone. And so growing up when I was young, I would just always tell people that my bones just weren't growing as theirs. I was just different. So I am small, smaller than the average person. I stand at 4 feet. And my husband, who is also little, he's 4'7". And then our two children also have the type of dwarfism that we have. And they are both around 4 feet as well.
I think it's important that we get the terminology right up front in this conversation. Can you share with people, because I think some people honestly don't know kind of the right language around dwarfism. Can you share that with us?
Of course. I think that's exactly correct. And I wish I lately I've been thinking all about this, well, actually for years, and I wish there wasn't a need to even have this conversation. But about, because I first am, I'm a woman who happens to have dwarfism, and terminology, I would rather be called my name than anything else. But in the past and throughout history, little people have been, there we go right there, little people. I think right now in this day and age, we do prefer that term when it is needed. And there have been some terms that have become extremely derogatory, but not everybody knows that. And continue to be used unknowingly. And I do believe with no harm intended in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was looking for. And I've known over the years when we can talk about it more, you know, when I talk about your conventions and the kids camp, I say, you know, they're doing a weekend with little people. It's incredible. And I'm not sure that everybody knows that. So I think it's important to share.
Right.
So tell me about the backdrop of your childhood and your experience growing up.
Sure. I was born in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio, and go Cleveland Browns, and born to two parents, my mom and dad, and I'm the only child. So we had a very, very small, wonderful little family. My parents made sure that I was involved in as much as I wanted to be, and even in things that I didn't want to be, but yet they supported me and pushed me forward. From the get-go, I believe because of my difference, my parents are of average size, and I was the only little person in our family as well as in our town. So because of my difference, they just did not want me to be treated any differently or for me to think that I needed to be treated any differently.
When do you remember first noticing that your body and stature were different from average bodies?
It's a good question. And I remember it very vividly. When I was younger, my parents had me go to Johns Hopkins University, where there was a short statured clinic, a bone disorder, bone growth clinic way back in the day. And we would go there every summer. And as I got older, I believe I was around, you know, seven or maybe even no younger than that, maybe five or six. And I was at one of these symposiums and I was seeing other little people, other children that were running around. And I remember very vividly seeing this one child running down the hallway. And I'm thinking to myself, do I look like that? Do I look like that when I run? And so I went to my mom and I said, Mom, do I look like that when I run? And then that's when the conversation started happening about how I was little and my bones grow differently. And it was different for me.
How old were you when that happened?
I want to say five.
So I know, because I spent a lot of time with you, you had incredible parents and just a great neighborhood and a lot of friends. I remember seeing and observing that. What I don't know, and we've never talked about it, is I think adolescents moving into preteen and teenage years are hard for everyone. They were certainly hard for me. As you grew out of being a younger child and into being a teenager, what was your experience? And do you think that your differences sort of heightened that for you in a sense?
I remember my friend started dating. And I remember that the feeling like was, oh, I wonder, you know, if I'm ever going to start dating and who was that going to be? And it really wasn't during school. I didn't find that relationship at school, whereas I saw a lot of my friends partnering with, you know, other friends at school. But what I did find was when I was in the early teens again, we started getting more involved in a group called Little People of America. And that is what really changed my life at the time. But I was old enough to start hanging around other kids, and we were allowed to do other things on our own. And we started going out and establishing these relationships with kids that really were all over the world. I established relationships that way and started dating within LPA. I dated my husband at a very, very young age, and I had just wonderful relationships. He is rad. Very.
I want you to explain LPA because it's such an incredible part of your life and your family's life. And when you explain it beyond what it is, I would love to know your first experience of walking in a room and having everybody look just like you.
Yeah, that's good. LPA, Little People of America, was founded by Billy Barty, who was a little person himself. He was an actor, an entertainer back in the 50s. And it was intended to just be a gathering of little people in a smaller section of the U.S., but then as it grew, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it is now all throughout the U.S., and I don't know how many people, but our conventions usually contain over 2,000 to 3,000, I believe, and that's little people along with their families. It was a huge part of my young child, my older childhood, I guess, and my young teenage years and my early 20s. I remember it being just a huge, huge impact. And going to these things, I would have countdowns with my friends on our walls because we were just wanting to go and see each other and be with each other and stand next to somebody and just look at them and be able to talk to them in their face. And that is a feeling that that still to this day I just love.
What was it like watching your kids experience that for the first time?
It was different for them, I think, than it was for me because they live it every day. The kids being born and raised to a family that's little, both Tom and I. And so to them, it was really no big deal. It didn't hit them as hard, I don't think, as it did Tom and I when we were younger.
And I think it's important, you talked about the families, that this is a misconception too. But as you mentioned, you have two average-sized parents. And Tom, how tall are Tom's brothers?
They're around 6 feet.
Yes, they're 6 feet. And his parents are of average height. So if you can explain that, and I think that's fascinating, sort of the lens and perspective of family members, whether it's a parent or a sibling, who are of average height.
I sure can. Good question. And it's a question that I really love talking about because people are just so interested in finding this out. And genetics, I think, is amazing anyway. So both Tom's parents and mine had no trace of dwarfism in their families before. So it was just something with the genetic match between my parents and Tom's parents, obviously, that when they were born, it was just something that was like one in 25,000 births. It actually happens. So, but most people that are born with dwarfism are born to average-sized parents, if that makes sense. So I think 80% of the kids that are born, achondroplasia especially, are born to average-sized parents. So now when Tom and I had decided to have children, there is some genetic stuff there where we have, when there's two people with achondroplasia who have a baby, there is a 50% chance that the child will be born with achondroplasia, just like us. There is a 25% chance that the baby will be born of average height. And then there's a 25% chance that the baby would get the dwarf gene from both Tom and I. And that unfortunately, is a horrific instance where the baby would either die before birth or stillborn or die shortly after.
So that had to be a scary and deeply emotional experience for you. What do you remember about that?
Very. It was. And it is for anyone going through. We were very scared. I was very scared, especially with our first, not only just because of the whole, you know, whether or not she was going to be little, but just the whole thing about, oh my gosh, I'm having a baby, and just her health in general. So we were one of the first couples to be tested with Sarah at 13 weeks gestation. We were able to have some prenatal testing to let us know that she was going to be born with achondroplasia.
Because your parents had no idea until you were born, correct?
That's correct. This genetic testing, the gene for the achondroplasia was found in the whole spectrum, very short time ago.
Obviously, especially with the circumstances, all you want is a happy, healthy baby. Did you think about what the experience would be like having an average-sized child? Or did you have I guess I'm just curious if you thought about it or if you and Tim talked about it.
Yes, we did. And I think we didn't care. I mean, I remember the discussions. It would be, no matter what the child was, average size or little, that wouldn't make any difference. And I do remember, like, joking around, and this is probably inappropriate, but I remember thinking that we could take our child to the grocery store and the trip would be much easier. Because everything is really high. But it wasn't a thing. We didn't really talk about it a lot because it was just, we don't really care as long as the baby's healthy.
Speaking of the grocery store, and, you know, I always love to, I guess, have these conversations through the lens of curiosity of people. There's things I know about extensions and driving and how you guys have remodeled your house, but speak to some of those everyday things. The grocery store, you're living in a world that is built for people of average size height. So what are some of those navigations?
Sure. In our cars, we have just pedal extensions that we're able to take on and off. They're just these metal things that clasp on to the existing pedals and just give us the ability to push the pedals sitting back. That's the only modification that we have with our cars. Living in the average size world, it's just what we know. I mean, I know nothing else, but I do know that the grocery store is not one of my favorite places to go, only because I always have to ask for help. Sometimes I used to take this stick, and sometimes I could finagle it to, you know, pop something down from a top shelf. And when I was younger, I would climb the shelf sometimes, but now I just ask because people are always, always, always very willing to help. And Tom still climbs. But what's nice now is that our grocery stores around here anyway have the deal where you can just order everything online and you can go pick it up. And it's all, yeah. So recently we do that quite a bit.
And then your house, modifying your house, because the same thing, a grocery store, you buy a new home and the countertops and the cabinetry is not built for your day-to-day life.
Right. So with that, we've done with our house here now very little accommodations. So we have stools everywhere. In the kitchen, we chose not to make any modifications for resale value. Plus, we have to adapt. And growing up with the kids in a house, we recently moved. But in the house that the kids grew up with, we were there for about 15 years. And we chose not to make any major accommodations just because we're always gonna have to adapt to getting out there outside of our home. We're gonna have to climb, and we're gonna have to ask, and we're gonna have to, just be mindful of things being different for us, and that's okay. And so we just chose not to do that to our home. Now that our next home, maybe when the kids are, well, they're going to be gone anyway, but when we go into our retirement home and we go to a place that we know it's just going to be mainly for Tom and I totally want everything accommodated. I want it all down. I want it all low. I want everything. I want to be able to go up to my kitchen counter and reach something in the back without, climbing up on a stool. So we'll see.
I'm just thinking of your stick and like the fact that it may have been bedazzled.
Oh, it was. It was. And it had a little white, like it was jimmied. I mean, it was really crazy. And I can see it was like a hook, and it was bedazzled with like this tape that had sparkles on it.
I knew it.
So, yeah.
And that, by the way, for the kids is so, I know how intentional you are and thoughtful in your parenting, but that is a gift, I think, to them to set it up. So for the world, they're going to navigate outside your home. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of your kids, who are awesome, did you have, and we all do, hopes and fears based on your experience growing up as a little person in this world?
Growing up as, no, I didn't. I have to say I did not, due to their dwarfism when they were born, because I felt like, well, it was no different than my upbringing how I was going to be, or how they were going to be brought up. So I didn't have any fears with that. It wasn't until later when they were able to walk, and we would go into the stores themselves. And when the kids were with me, the reactions oftentimes were much more intense from other people, from people who were also in the store. Like, it wasn't just me anymore. It was now about my children. And I think when I started noticing that, I became more protective, and I didn't want that. And it really was upsetting to me, because to me, I dealt with that all my life, and it didn't really affect me. But when I saw it happening to my children, that was something that that was difficult for me.
Did you see it affecting them, or would you observe them experiencing it in a hurt, a painful way?
It would affect them when I would approach the curiosity of the people that we were in front of. Like, let's say we would go to the mall and we would walk in, and I would see, a group of people, and it all depends. I mean, we get all types of reactions, and if I reacted to their reaction in a negative way, it really put my kids in a bad spot. They were very embarrassed. Like, if I would go up to this group of people and say, "Hey, do you have any questions?" That kind of thing. That was something where the kids, when they were younger, were embarrassed when that happened, because they felt like that brought even more attention to us. But I do believe now, as they're older, they see the importance of talking to people who have this curiosity instead of ignoring it. And it's just as simple, do you have any questions? I see that you're probably curious of my story. Do you have any questions? I'll be happy to answer. And most people, all people, just really want to realize that you're human.
And I know you're talking about the experience of being protective as a mother. And I know from talking to you, it's not actually the reaction of the kid who's pointing or asking questions. It's often the reaction of the mother. Explain that dynamic, especially for kids, I think, any mother, because kids do notice things and they say things that adults don't. And I think that you've really taught me something that's a gift, and I'd love for you to share that.
Oh, well, and I love talking about this because it is so, I mean, everybody feels when there's difference out there, it's, we don't know how to respond. So when we go out, their children are so curious. They just come flat out and ask, you know, why is that mommy so small? Why is that woman so small? You know, I mean, so when children ask that, oftentimes the parent embarrassed, they don't know how to respond. They don't know why I'm little. So they distract the child. They sometimes pull them away. They sometimes put their hands over their eyes. They sometimes yell at them. And what that then teaches that child is that they can't ask questions. Then their curiosity is bad. So when I see those type of situations, if I feel like it's a positive, I will go up to the mother, often to our father or friend or whoever, and I'll say, hey, I see there's some questions. Would you like to, you know, ask me anything? And then if the child will definitely want to ask something, and all they need to know is that I can speak, that I have a name, that I'm a mom, not a kid, because that's confusing. Why are you a mom, but you're 4 feet tall? So they just need to hear those words. And then more times than not, the next thing that comes out of their mouth is, so do you want to see this new ball that I just got? I mean, they don't care.
That connection has been made. And the connection has been made, and it goes to the first thing you said, which is talking about the terminology. You wish it didn't even exist, because that is who you are. You're a mom, you're a person, you're a... So kind of, I think breaking down that curiosity gets you there in a cool way. I know that there are times when people have been really shitty. And I remember you told me one recently, and you came up to them, I believe, in the parking lot and said something, which I thought was really cool. Do you know what story I'm talking about?
You remember that?
It wasn't that long ago.
Yes.
Maybe it was.
In the grocery store parking lot? Yeah.
So will you share that?
Yes. I sure will. It's with smartphones now and cameras, it is semi-common when we're out in public that we see pictures are being taken of us. So we're very hyper aware of phones and people's motions. So there was a time at the grocery store a couple of years ago where Tom and I were in line and we were paying for our groceries. And there was a couple behind us who were, they were old enough. They were like probably mid-30s, 40s or so. And the gentleman was taping us. And I was embarrassed. You know, it just puts you in an awkward position. I'm paying for my groceries. I'm busy doing that. I'm talking with the cashier. And I am very, very well aware of what's happening right behind me. So I can just feel my pulse get tighter and, you know, faster. And I knew it was happening. And I'm like, Tom, they're taping us. And he goes, I know, let's just go. So we were done. We're out in the parking lot. And these people that were behind us continued. They came out and our cars were actually right across from each other. Like the backs of our cars were facing each other. I remember this so clearly. And the woman at this point was standing against her car, taping us, putting our groceries into the trunk. And I went over there without Tom knowing. And I said, you know, hey, I noticed that you're filming us. Do you have any questions, or would you like to ask me anything, or do you want to talk about anything? And they're like, well, we're not taping you. I said, oh, okay. It just looks like you are. And the gentleman said to me, why don't you just go back with your friends from the Wizard of Oz? And I was shocked because things like that don't normally happen face to face. I don't know what's happening with people that I can't hear, but to my face, I can only say a handful of times where something that shocking, I didn't know how to respond. It kind of pushed me back. And I said, okay, I just ask that if you are filming us, that you choose to be very kind where you put it. If you're putting it somewhere, just be kind. I'm just asking you that, please. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, and get away from me. And Wizard of Oz and Freak and that kind of thing. So I turned around and went back to the car, and Tom was like, what just happened? Like, he didn't even know that because it was across the way. And I was terrified. I was like shaken a little bit because I didn't, I realized that I put myself in a position that, that could have been dangerous. And I have since changed my responses to what I think is people filming us or taking pictures. I usually just wave because I would rather be thought of as a kind individual than someone who is threatening. And then so next time that person sees another little person, I don't want, you know, I want there to be a kind and loving memory instead of something negative.
You know, the thing, I don't remember the Wizard of Oz part. Why I asked is I remember you saying, I know you're filming us, and all I ask is that when you, wherever you're going to share it, you're kind. That I imagine it was, your blood was boiling, it's hurtful, it's stressful, and for you to, I don't know, just come to it from that place was really cool. I want to talk about medical things that you guys have been through, because there are some, you know, procedures and that were necessary along the way that both you and Tom and the kids went through. So can you speak to the sort of medical piece?
Sure. We have been very, very blessed with good health overall. We really have. There do come some medical complications with achondroplasia. Most common, especially with younger children, is some back and neck issues, which our children did not have any of that. However, legs, they bow. So it's something that they need to have fixed in order to align their body better and have better support for their back. So both of our kids had leg surgery to unbow their legs. Tom had it as well as a young child. He did. And that's something where they go in and they actually cut the bone and they kind of reset it. And then they're in casts for 6 to 12 weeks. And there's many other procedures now that are a little quicker and less intrusive.
But I remember with the kids, it's 6 to 12 weeks in a cast, which means all of a sudden in a wheelchair at school.
Yeah. 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 Wheelchair, then walkers. Both kids had it done young enough where they had tutors come into the house. But when it did become time to go to school, they were in a wheelchair, and the school provided an aid for both of them, which was so helpful. But they just adapted. I mean, they knew it was something that it was going to make them feel better and they could run faster. And it was just something that they had to go through. Our ears are something that we all have, all four of us have problems with. That Sarah actually has a hearing aid. We have eustachian tubes in the back of our ears that are horizontal. So we have some hearing loss. For the most part, you know, we have been very fortunate. And there can certainly be some pretty big medical issues.
Speaking to medicine and science, I know growing up, I was aware through you that there was a bone lengthening procedure, which I remember was gnarly, like drilling screws into the legs and lengthening them by turning it. And today, with the advent in technology, I think it's an actual growth hormone injection. I know you have really passionate opinions on both of those and sort of what they mean to be a little person and have that happening. Uh-huh. Can you explain that? What the procedures are and your thinking around them?
Sure. The bone lengthening procedures was just that. They actually, and it was for people who just wanted to be taller. It's still, they still have achondroplasia with this bone lengthening procedure. It doesn't change genetically who they are, but it just, it's a procedure where they go into the bone and in the arms and legs only. And they set the bones every, I don't even know details, but where, and they are able to make them longer. So new bone growth can fill in the gaps until they usually, I believe, gain like a foot or a foot and a half in height. And that was something that was, seemed to be pretty, I don't want to say popular, but we heard about it a lot, like 10 years ago, maybe. And then since then, there is now this drug that is coming out and being tested on children with achondroplasia that are injections that actually goes into the genetic makeup of the child, and it stops the inhibition of bone growth. So it stops that part where the cartilage doesn't form into bone. It stops it, so it does form into bone. And so it, they're thinking what it will do is if you start giving it to a person with achondroplasia as a child, it has to be very young. So during their growing periods, that their bones will catch up and just grow like they, like if you didn't have achondroplasia. So like as an average size person, they would just start growing. So, but so genetically you are being changed. From the achondroplasia bit goes, I don't really know that much about it. I'm not that scientific. But my feelings about it is interesting because I think it's changed over the past couple of years or months. You know, if I was average size and if I knew that I was going to be having a child with achondroplasia, not knowing anything that I know about it now, not knowing that I could, you know, have a child that could just have a regular, normal life with achondroplasia, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what my parents would have done if this was something that was offered to them while I was, you know, even in vitro and this option would have been available. I don't know. But knowing what I know now, I would choose not to make any of those changes because I mean, why would I? There is nothing in my life that being little or having achondroplasia has provided a negative. I wouldn't change anything. I'm just going to say that.
And I know Sarah, your daughter, I don't know if she posted or maybe shared with my mom about feeling passionate about it. This is an injection that said I wouldn't be me, you know, and because you do have this amazing, beautiful whole life. Yeah, I think it's complicated.
Well, I think it brings up like the whole like why do you want to get rid of difference just because we're little and just because we're different? I think medically they're coming at it in an angle more about health reasons, about the backs and about the legs and about the discomfort with stenosis and all of that. But I, you know, on another side, I feel like, why are you trying to erase who we are? And if we did that for every condition or every person of difference, everybody would be the same and it would be very boring.
It'd be so freaking boring.
Yes.
What do you think is the best thing about being a little person?
It's being able to be out in the world and know that nobody is the same and everybody has something to give. And I believe that being different just gives me another lens to see others and accept. I think the acceptance piece is huge. Accept differences of all kinds and just be aware.
Is there a hardest part?
The grocery store.
That's what the bedazzled wand is for.
I mean, there, of course, like if I was in a moment of something, I would be able to bring it up. But if I look at it as a whole, no, I don't. I mean, the only thing I can think of is if I wasn't little, I wouldn't be where I am. And that's terrifying. I mean, I can't imagine being anywhere else.
You've touched on this a lot in our conversation, but I'm going to ask it. What are the differences between what you think society thinks of living with dwarfism and what dwarfism is actually like?
That's a really good question. I never really thought of it that way. I think that living with dwarfism, it's hard for me to answer because we just do. We have to make some adjustments. We have to make some accommodations when we can't reach something, but that's it. I mean, it's just about reaching. I think people's perceptions a lot, and I believe it is changing for the positive. I think historically, especially, people's perceptions of little people is that they're creatures or things versus human. Or just not human. They're more of a character than a human.
It's so interesting because you said it's hard to answer the question because it's just your life and it's so normalized to you. And it's so beyond normalized to me that you are just Cassie, you are my cousin. And, you know, it's hard to step outside of it.
I agree.
And my kids, and I have to say, your kids and my kids are very close. And Sarah, your daughter, mm-hmm. at one point, our littlest asked. I don't think the big kids ever even have said anything.
No.
Because they've been close. But Esty, our daughter, had a question. And Sarah, I remember, explained and sat down with her. And my bones are just a different length than yours. And so Esty was, I was getting her dressed one day. And I don't know how old she was, 5 or 6. And she had this like really great outfit. And I'm like, I want to steal this. This is like so cute. And she was like, well, mom, then you'd have to be, you know, a kindergarten, your mom. And that wouldn't work because you'd be small. And then she goes, oh, it could work because in our family, some people have smaller bones. It could work, mom. But it was like the light bulb went off. And so it is so normalized. And I hope one day that's just is what it is for every person on the planet. Yeah. How do you think living with a difference, and we all have differences, has shaped and formed who you are today?
I think that living, but like you said, everybody's different. It's just some differences are more apparent. But I think living with a more apparent or more visible difference has made me realize that that we all have a common desire or common need to feel human.
I have to say, which I've shared with you many times, I've looked up to you my entire life. So I want to thank you for that, for being a great role model as a person and a mom in my life. And thank you for sharing your story with our listeners. And I hope they learned something new. And I think you've done a beautiful job just in informing people and sharing yourself.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share. I love it.
Okay. We do the little thing called rapid fire, which you know because you're my cousin and you have to listen to the podcast.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I guess.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay.
Favorite place?
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
So freaking awesome. Love it. Best way to spend a Sunday?
With Tom and the kids on a drive in the car.
The thing you like most about yourself?
That I love to love.
Beer or wine?
Both.
Duh. Favorite song?
Salisbury Hill and You're in My Heart by Rod Stewart.
Biggest pet peeve?
Spacing errors in sentences.
Your best advice to your 20-year-old self?
Life is going to be awesome.
Greatest hope for your children?
To love themselves.
And finally, your favorite words of wisdom?
There was, growing up in our laundry room, my mom had this poster up, or this picture, and it was a saying, "Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Just walk beside me and be my friend." And that seriously runs in my head very, very often at different areas of my life. And I mean, to me, it comes up all the time in my job, in personal life. But that was something that I saw every day. And it was a big one.
I want to let our listeners know you're in Ohio. I'm in California. And we're using a professional podcasting network to record this interview. And they somehow gave us screen names. And you have popped up as... And you have popped up as Bright Amplifier.
Yep.
And my name is Passionate Emoji. So Bright Amplifier, I love you. You're awesome. And I can't wait to see you in person.
Passionate Emoji, I love you more. And thank you so much. This has been a blast.
Today's episode supports Little People of America, LPA. And after my conversation with Cassie, I hope you understand why LPA is such a special organization. In doing my research on LPA, I learned that short stature is generally caused by one of more than 200 medical conditions known as dwarfism. And LPA welcomes all 200 plus forms of dwarfism. Cassie talked about the magic of their conventions when she walked in a room and everyone else looked just like she did. But this is just one piece of LPA. They are also providing parent support, medical support, education, scholarships, grants, and their members range from newborn babies to senior citizens. You can learn more about their work at lpaonline.org. That's lpaonline.org. And thank you again to Cassie, Tom, Sarah and Sam for being awesome people, and Cassie for making the time to share your story with us today. All the Wiser is produced by Erica Gerard at PodKit Productions. Our sound engineer is Juan Diego from Harmonix. And our associate producer is Kessie Hollister. As always, thank you for listening. I hope if you like today's episode, you'll take a moment to rate and review the podcast and enjoy the rest of your day. That was awesome. We're done recording.
We're done.
Yeah. We did it!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 support your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.